Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the HTI2 Proposed Rule Task Force Group 1 meeting. I'm Peter Karras with the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Technology Policy and Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT, and I will serve as your designated federal officer today, acting on behalf of Seth Pazinski. This meeting is open to the public. Public feedback is welcome throughout the meeting. Comments can be made via the Zoom chat feature. Also, just a reminder that we do have scheduled time for verbal public comments towards the end of our agenda today. We will get started with our meeting, and I will first begin with roll call of the HTI2 Proposed Rule Task Force Group 1 members. When I call your name, please indicate that you are present. Let's start with our co-chair, Bryant Thomas Karras.
Present.
Shyla Blend.
Present. Good morning.
Good morning. Hans Botzendijk. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Good morning. Lee Fleischer. Raj Gudvarti.
Present.
Jillian Haney.
Present.
Joel Hartzell.
Present.
Stephen Hester. Aaron Holt-Coyne. Jim Gerges.
Present.
Mary Beth Carrillo.
Present.
Kike Lamo Oshunkantan.
Good morning. I'm present. Thank you.
Good morning. Zainab Sumar King.
Present.
Naresh Sundar Rajan.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Thomas Wilkinson has indicated that he will not be in attendance for today's meeting. Thank you, everyone. Is there anyone I missed or anyone who just joined that would like to indicate their presence?
Sho Wu from CDC is here.
Welcome. All right. I will turn it over to Bryant, our co-chair, for opening remarks to get us into our meeting. Bryant, over to you.
All right. Well, I'm uncharacteristically going to keep my opening remarks exceedingly brief today because we've got a lot to cover and a lot of guests in attendance. Just in case we need to do deep dives on any of the F criteria that we're seeking to get through today. Today's agenda is fairly packed, and we will be plowing through as quickly as possible, but I'm not to dissuade people from comment, but we just knowing that we're going to need potential time for discussion, we wanted to go through and check off ones that to our quick assessment seem to be easier than or how shall I say it, no-brainers, some easy acceptance of like, yes, we should have been using that updated implementation guide years ago. So let's check this one off. I'm hoping we can get through as many of those as possible and then start to have a deeper discussion on ones that are perhaps a little more, not controversial, but a little more weedy. We've invited guests from the respective program areas at the CDC to be in attendance, whether or not we thought there needed to be discussion, because one can't predict. So for those guests who are on, we apologize if you're here and there's no need for discussion. We may move on. You'll still be able to comment or provide any detail that you feel needs to be shared. But thank you again for being here, and take it as a compliment. If we don't need to do much in that area, that must mean that the criteria made sense to us. With that, what's With one exception, we did move the ELR potentially to be out of sequence. In fact, we're doing a lot of them out of sequence today. So don't be thrown off by us bouncing around within the numbers of the F criteria. Next slide, please. All right. I went over this last time, but I guess just for Jillian, who was 20,000 feet in the air during our first kickoff session, this is our charge. And as you remember, we have to stay within our scope. But we've got a fairly permissive scope here. Next slide. And this is our sequence. We're, as I said, we're moving the ELR criteria for discussion within the section that's addressing physician order entry or computerized order entry. Yes. All right. Which is the next session?
Yes, next Tuesday.
Okay.
Already August.
Wow. All right. All right. Next slide. Unless anybody from the ONC team wanted to comment on the previous. And then we will have one kind of housekeeping or cleanup session on the 27th, but that one we will be needing to be getting our final comments probably moved from the spreadsheet into a Word document so that it can be combined when we reassemble as the task force as a whole, the three subcommittees reassembling on September 3rd. Any questions on the process, schedule, and what we're trying to get through today? Great. An unusually quiet group today. How about, did anybody have difficulty getting onto the Google Sheet?
I did, but I have access now. So.
Okay, great. Okay. I was going to say, we can help you live and watch you type your password into the screen on a public Zoom. Anything else? Let me refer over to Rachel and Molly. Anything else we need to cover, or should we jump right into it?
Nothing from my end. I think we are good to get into the meat of it.
All right. Rachel, how's your voice today? All right. Not hearing Rachel, so let's move on. All right.
Sorry about that. Trying to get off mute, but thanks, guys. I think we'll charge ahead. Go for okay. it, Brian.
So as I said, we're going to jump through the early F criteria that we know and love. We've moved ELR so they could be inclusive in the discussion with other laboratory based, and then we also moved ECR to the very end of the sequence, going a little bit out of order. So don't be thrown by that. If we do get through all of these early number F criteria today, we could launch into some preliminary discussion on other topics, but we'll see how it goes. Next slide. All right. So I wanted to acknowledge that our guests, I apologize for, in the interest of time, we're not going to do our traditional Zoom introductions so that you know who you're speaking to and that we know who you all are. Many of you can go with with no introduction needed because you've been affiliated with your program for so long that your name is nearly synonymous with the CDC program area. But so I thank you for your service. I thank you for being on with us today. As I said, we may or may not need you to weigh in on criteria depending on how the discussion goes. Next slide. All right, I think we're jumping into it. Next slide. All right, so again, as I said, going a little bit out of order, we're starting with lucky number 7. Let's see, can I get a volunteer from the committee to read through the charge here? So you don't have to hear my voice all morning long. Don't all jump first. Perhaps our CDC guests related to hospital healthcare surveys.
No comments. This is Prachi Mehta.
Okay.
Brian, do you want me to go ahead and read through it for folks?
That would be fabulous, Rachel.
Okay, no worries. Okay, so we're talking about F7 here. This is the healthcare surveys transmission to public health agencies. We're looking at, we have proposed to update the health IT module certification to F7 to support the HL7 CBA R2 implementation guide, for National Healthcare Surveys, NHCS, R1 STU release 3.1, US realm by January 1st, 2027. We also have a request for comment on use of the Firebase Healthcare Surveys content implementation guide. In particular, should ONC consider modifying the certification criteria to require a health IT module to support creation and submission using at least the CBA or FHIR versions of the standard? And then lastly, we have proposed to change the name just slightly to be healthcare surveys - transmission to public health agencies. So we request comment on these areas.
All right, any comment? All right, so this is one, I just put what I believe is the first comment into the Google Sheet. Can we jump over to the Google Sheet and put that on the screen?
Yes, I'm sharing now. Give me one sec.
So Brian, are you looking for discussion? Are you looking for? Yeah.
How do the task force members feel about this one?
And so just for some additional context, and Prachi, jump in as well, that implementation guide that we proposed, that HL7 CDA R2 implementation guide, is the most recent version at the time of authoring this proposed rule. So imagine if folks have comments on that, certainly open to discussion, but like Brian put in that comment, they're very open to the discussion regarding the request for comment within the proposed rule regarding the fire implementation guide and readiness there. I imagine there likely isn't a huge amount to say about the CDA implementation guide.
No, so I'll make a motion to support. I don't know if Brent can see my hand.
Sorry. And Steve's up next. So yeah, go ahead, Jillian.
Yeah, so motion to be in support of naming the standard, of updating the standard.
All right, can I, before I get a second, can I make a friendly amendment? You're supporting just the reference to the CDA R2 standard. You're not commenting on the sections where they're requesting comment, because I feel like we should not just leave that blank as a committee if ONC is requesting comment on a particular.
Agreed. I was just trying to get that first part out of the way.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you. Steve.
Hey, Brian, thank you. I think I've got a more general comment that relates to all of the standards, and that's making sure that we've got continuity and clarity about what standard is actually enforced on the books and resolved against the SFAP process. So mm-hmm. Again, I'm not questioning whether it should be included in regulation, but just alignment with what might be subsequently adopted through SFAP, so there is a commonly understood reference for all parties about what's actually in play at okay. The end of the
Yeah, can we, thanks Steve or Ike, because I guess we do have two Steves in our sub. Can I ask for some clarification from the ONC team? Is there a mechanism by which we can make a comment to reference a particular standard, but unlike the lock in time that we got with 2015 criteria, can we make it this standard or any subsequent updates as adopted by SFAP and
I think the OPIL team can likely weigh in on this in more detail than I can, but because of some APA regulations, we do have to reference an explicit standard. We cannot propose a quote most recent standard, which was part of the kind of genesis behind the use of SFAP. So we do need to reference a specific standard in a proposed and a final rule.
Right. Just to clarify, my concern is that previous regulation opened up the door for having more variable standards. And want to make sure that we're setting a stage where there's clarity in what's in play so that we're not in a position where folks can be looking at regulation that says this version, but SFAP adopted something else, and what's actually in force and what's the correct reference.
Okay.
So to this space, comments that say there needs to be a pointer to an officially adopted in place or adopted standard in place might be a suggestion as modifying text so that regulation includes a pointer to a source of truth.
All right. And so are you suggesting that the release 3.1 is not sufficiently published and in place, or you said that at the start that this was more of a general criteria?
Oh, I'm suggesting for any of these standards, if the regulation is put in place by regulation, but something else is adopted through SFAP, then there's confusion about what's actually in force in the marketplace. So having a pointer to what is actually the most current standard and the one that's actually in force would be really helpful.
Yeah.
And I think, just to note here too, that SVAP is all a voluntary process. So in terms of what the certification program is enforcing would be whatever would be finalized in a final rule, not what is an SVAP. SVAP is all an optional program to participate right. in.
Well, yeah, but the use of certified technology is also a voluntary program.
Yeah. So, but I think that Molly, I think what Ike's trying to get to is that in many of the cases, updates in SVAP may be errata that are fixing something that's been discovered, or a newer criteria that's reverse compatible with previously published ones. So adoption of the newer version would not necessarily be out of certification or out of alignment with the voluntary certification. They'd still pass the as published rule reference.
And the difficulty is for public health reporting and surveillance, everybody needs to be using compatible standards or the data cannot be appropriately received and utilized. So if things get out of sync and there's something adopted through SVAP that might be more modern but is not backwards compatible, that creates a real issue.
Mm-hmm. One quick note, we also, for SVAP, we only can SVAP based off of an updated version to the standard, right? So we cannot, so if for instance, there's an updated version of an immunization IG, but it's using FHIR, that is something that would not be eligible for SVAP. And so I do think for, in terms of how SVAP works today, that backwards compatibility is already baked into the process, because basically we're only encouraging updates to that specific IG that's referenced in reg. If there's, you know, large deviations, that would probably be a new IG that wouldn't be eligible for SVAP.
Okay. Thank you. That clarification helps. Thanks.
All right. Rajesh?
I think, you know, looking at the question, should ONC consider modifying the criteria to submit using CDA versus FHIR? I think it is probably good to continue to give both options for a period of time, as FHIR is kind of the de facto standard with many other standards slowly maturing. One question I have is, I don't know the 3.1 maturity level in terms of the FHIR-based healthcare surveys. I mean, you know, how many pilot implementations they have seen? Is there enough confidence that it is in a good place to introduce? Because by the time they write these standards and by the time, you know, they come out, sometimes you'll have a good 6 months. Maybe there is enough done. So if there is some confidence level.
We may have an answer from the program area, Rajesh.
Yeah, I can answer that. So currently, our providers are using mainly CDA 1.2. Mm-hmm. Some of them are transitioning to 3.1. As it relates to FHIR, currently we are in the process of piloting with three sites. And we hope to have results from that pilot by the end of this year, which will kind of also inform our future implementations.
Okay, makes sense. I think that was my comment as well. I think depending on the confidence level, yeah.
And just for a scale, that's three sites out of more than 3,000?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that it's fairly early in the adoption curve of FHIR. Right. But we want to have, you know, since it was 2015 the last time the reg was updated to point to things, hopefully it won't take us that long to transition. But I agree with the earlier comment that we're going to need to have, Rajesh, as you said, we're going to need to be able to support both.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because so many institutions won't be able to make that transition as timely as we might.
Right.
All right, back to the program area.
Yeah, I just wanted to second that completely, that at least for healthcare surveys, there will need to be transition time built in. And so allowing both CDA and FHIR will be very important. Thanks.
Okay. Is there a release for trial use reference for the FHIR implementation that you're using for the pilot test?
So for the pilot, we're actually using the published version. We actually have a published FHIR implementation guide, which is what is being used. Yep.
Can you put the exact published reference?
Sure.
HL7 STU, or you think it's actually not in STU? It's
yeah. Let me put it in the chat.
Okay. So what's while she's putting that in the chat, let's get a motion on the very first section of this that's referencing the CDA R2 implementation guide. We have a motion on the table from Jillian. Do I hear a second?
A second.
All right. All in favor of the task force being in support of updating to that new CDA release 3.1 as the certification criteria standard? Say aye.
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 Any opposed? Great. I do, and then back once. I'm not seeing anything in the chat yet.
Just a second.
All right. And then once you finish that, I have a clash question for you. You mentioned that some hospitals or some providers are still submitting under the previous release CDA.
Yes. Most of them are. Most of them are submitting version 1.2 CDA.
Okay. So,
And the new ones we're onboarding, we're asking them to use 3.1.
So, does the program want those that have implemented under the earlier release to upgrade to the 3.1?
So we're not pushing them to do that because our preference is then just to move from CDA 1.2 to FHIR, depending on what the results are from this pilot.
Ooh, so that complicates things. Because once if we put into regulation 3.1, then they'll have to upgrade to 3.1.
And then after that, then they would do FHIR after that. Is that?
Yeah, which hospitals will not be happy about a two-step upgrade process. Jillian, thoughts on that? Do we reference the older standard first to keep people in compliance? Do you have any modifications to your motion?
Can anybody comment on, is there any SME that can comment on how that has previously worked by referencing the older standard? Katie or Molly?
So I can't comment on that specifically, but what I can say is what we've requested comment on in the proposed rule was similarly to what we finalized in HTI-1 for electronic case reporting, which was the certified health IT module would need to be able to transmit using either the CDA implementation guide or the FHIR implementation guide. And so that was what we've requested comment on there, was if this was a criteria that made sense to propose a similar either or situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be our strong preference as well. Sorry.
Okay, so if we could, I think what we should do then is make a slight modification to, we're supportive of adoption of 3.1 or the new fire implementation that's referenced, and you've given us the link, the spelled out
fire. Hold on, let me.
I'm not seeing.
It's the. Hold on, it's right here. I'm putting it in the chat.
Effective. It's been active since 2023, so it's been out for a while.
Right, I would expect we would want to do an and or rather than selecting one, just for clarity's sake.
Yeah. If we can do 1.2, comma 3.1, comma fire.
Ooh. All right. So we'd be referencing two different CDA versions.
Yes.
Is that going to get people to move? If people are already on the 1.2 version? Or maybe put a time limit on that.
Yeah, yeah, I think that, yeah.
1.2 right. Until 2026 or 2027.
Right. So right now that is the proposal, is that mm-hmm. that implementation proposal guide would expire that. In 2027.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yep.
All right. Let's do that. And we'll be in support of that with the friendly amendment of adding the reference to the new 1.0.1 IG.
Mm-hmm. As an option.
As an optional mm-hmm. early adoption criteria mm-hmm. that wouldn't put people out of compliance. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's likely to be modified. The pilot's likely to find something wrong and fix. Mm-hmm. But we'll at least give those pilot sites a pathway where their effort's not.
Let's be careful about that language, so that we're not tying hands. And we just went through this with HL7, some other discussions about DSTUs and versions and subversions and numbering versions. So let's be cautious about our language.
Yeah. So
we're not recommending something that's effectively out of date.
All right. Well, I think we're falling behind schedule. So it's I like that. Let's make it an or. The CDA or the new referenced fire IG. There's usually some letters behind it if it's released for trial use or we'll make sure we need to get the exact reference from HL7 to which build that is. All right.
We'll make sure we can include it in the spreadsheet, Bryant, so that folks can check it out.
Yeah, we can keep going back and make sure we've got the right one. All right, next slide, or if we can stay on the spreadsheet. If actually we should read the proposed language. So if we could flip back to the slides for a second. Thank you. So now we're jumping to the next one in our assessment that we thought would be a slam dunk. And again, I'm queuing up folks from the CDC program to help us out here. Would somebody like to read the proposed language? Don't all volunteer at once. Molly or Rachel, can I get you to go through it?
Yeah, do folks still see just the spreadsheet? I just see the spreadsheet, but
I'm seeing
I don't see the sorry, slide
I'm seeing
deck.
The spreadsheet on one screen and I'm seeing the slide deck on the other.
There we go.
There we are, yes.
Great. All right. Now I can see it. So
I can miss you when we're done.
Criteria. Thanks so much, Aaliyah. I really appreciate you transitioning back and forth from the spreadsheet. Antimicrobial use and resistance reporting. This is transmission to public health agencies. We propose to create antimicrobial use and resistance reporting information for electronic transmission in accordance with the following sections of HL7, CDA, R2 implementation guide, healthcare associated infections, HAI reports release 3 in US realm. So there are these three components, HAI antimicrobial use and resistance, AUR antimicrobial resistance option, ARO and report, and the numerator. Antimicrobial resistance option, ARO, summary report, that's the denominator, and the antimicrobial use, AUP, summary report, which is the numerator and the denominator. We also are proposing to slight change name to the antimicrobial use and resistance reporting hyphen transmission to public health agencies. We are looking forward to comments.
All right. So first, before we jump in, I want to acknowledge we've had a couple of people join after the roll call. Tom, can you state you're present?
I'm present.
Accounted for? Okay. Enjoy. All right. Anybody else join?
Yeah. Lee Fleischer.
Present. Hey, Lee.
Thanks.
Hi, Brian. It's Andrea Bennon. I joined as well. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. All right. So perfect timing, Andrea. So let's open up the discussion on this criteria.
At the risk of maybe sounding a little uninformed here, what was the previous name? Sorry.
Molly, is
the name change of significance that I should be tracking to? Sorry.
No, it's not very significant.
No, yeah. Sorry, I was
trying to frantically looking it up.
Yeah, okay. We were just being consistent with honestly where we were putting the dashes and the upper and lower cases.
Thank you.
So
okay.
This should be a almost nothing to change from a name perspective. Yeah. And then this is just for folks who are not as embroiled in this implementation guide. This is the most recent one at the time of publication for this particular information.
Okay. All right.
One of the other changes too was we removed the page numbers. There used to be page numbers, which made it challenging just based on updates. So there are no more page numbers referencing these, only the section names.
Okay. And I'll defer to Sho Wu on our team who will know more about the details and can comment on the detail. Yeah.
And just wanted to let you know, Andrea, it's just essentially like reversing it. So we have the current name is transmission to public health agencies hyphen antimicrobial use and resistance reporting. So it's just switching it around so that it's all uniform.
All right. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't something I should have, you know, that's all good.
Great.
Thanks.
Great. So let's start members of the committee. We'll start with Wu.
So I just want to give this group a heads up that we are going to have a new version of IG in about a month. So the newer version will be bringing both AU and AR to the same version of IG, which is 4D3.
All right. So will it be voted in at HL7 in September, or when will it which will be too late? When will it become publicly released?
I don't have a timeline yet. Amy, do you know when it's likely to be?
I think they're working on resolving all the comments right now and plan to have it finalized within the next month or so. We plan to implement it for the January 2025 data moving forward.
So 2027 would slow you down. These were supposed to be the easy ones. All right. Lee, go ahead and we'll come back to that.
Yeah, nice to see you, Andrea. I'm just wanting to make sure CMS proposed changing the quality measure and want to make sure it's aligned. They're separating the way they report it.
Right, in promoting interoperability, they've been separated where antimicrobial use and antimicrobial resistance have been separated into two separate things. I think this accounts for that, if I'm understanding correctly. I'm sorry, I have a kind of a smaller screen today, so I can't actually read what's being shown here, but
Let me zoom in on the proposed rule summary section. Yeah.
And just a comment on this, it was broken out according to those two. So we do, and that's why we point to the specific profiles within the IG as well, is to account for that. And also just to say that, as Abby commented, right, this was still like CMS reviewed this as part of clearance as CDC did. So I do think it's aligned.
So Lee, this was an issue where the denominators needed to be pulled out and reported in a way that could create that measure. So we now have ARO and AUP.
Okay.
It looks like separately reported. They're still part of the same IG though, correct?
Yes. That's the plan. They will all use the same IG version.
Yep.
So it's not that the measure is separated into two separate IGs, it's that there are specific call-outs to variables within that IG.
Exactly.
They needed to be reported in order to meet the CMS criteria. All right. I'm stymied a little bit. Can we get any more detail on the timing of the release date of that updated guide that you're planning on, that the program is planning on implementing by 2025?
So I will just say, from an ONC perspective, again, based on other federal regulations like APA, we cannot reference standards that are not published at the time, and we cannot reference future standards in the rule. So just to put that out there as a statement, again, this would be something that certified health IT modules would need to be able to do that does not necessarily.
We could though adjust the timeline, that instead of keeping this currently referenced one active until 2027, we could sunset it at 2026 or 2025, or is that also not?
So the proposal as it is written now is sunsetting the current standard that's out there, which would then make this this proposal active after that date. So this one would be the.
So we would then be referencing a standard that was more than 3 years out of date and had been replaced months after we published. That feels bad.
Is there a way to just do it where it's sort of somehow inclusive, like this or later?
You missed that at the start.
Sorry, okay.
We can't reference vaporware.
I will point to the fact that ONC does have a process called SVAP, which could assist in certain circumstances such as this.
Yeah, as long as it's reverse compatible, do we know if the new soon to be published one breaks any components that are in the previous one? Or are they just additions of new variables or new survey data?
It is additions of new variables, but essentially they cannot, vendors will only be able to use the new version come January 2025 and forward. They can use the R3 for reporting 2024 data, but come January 2025, they'll have to use the R4D3 or the files will not be accepted by NHSM.
Yeah, if this rule goes into place though, Amy, they'll have to do this one until 2027. I mean, they'll have to do this referenced one to stay in compliance. This could be, so we may want to say we don't support this if you guys are definitely wanting to move.
I was just going to add that SVAP doesn't require standards to be backwards compatible.
Okay.
If a health IT developer were to certify to a newer standard, like using a newer standard, but they were certifying to an older version of a standard, then it would need to be backwards compatible in order to pass like a testing tool. Right. But that's sort of a unique circumstance. And I think the only time when backwards compatibility really matters for the certification program. But in general, I hope that didn't confuse anyone. In general, for SVAP, backwards compatibility is not a consideration.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that, Johnny. Jillian.
Is, apropos your comment about abstaining for right now, would that then mean there could be no, like, update to NPRM, like if we abstain from commenting on this now, and could we then comment later, or do you have to wait for a brand new NPRM to be released?
It would have to be. Yeah, I guess if.
Or could there be an amendment or something like that?
There's got to be something to comment on as an open comment period to make a comment, whether it's an NPRM, whether it's something, USCDI, whether it's an ONDEC, whether it's an ISA, are some of the more common public comment periods, but it's the NPRM that's actually the regulation. So commenting on ONDEC or USCDI or USCDI Plus is going to help, or HL7, is going to change the standard, but it won't change what's in regulation.
So there could be no amendment to this.
No
amendment to this that could then update appropriately.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to go back in time. This is our chance to amend it during this 60-day window. If we wanted to make some changes, but once it's locked in, that will stand until the next time a proposed rule comes
This was part of the process from prior rules about what they were looking at changing when they moved away from looking at certification additions to more flexible criteria. And that was one of the aspects of moving away from like the 2015 edition was to provide more flexibility in evolving standards.
So does that, I feel like I've heard two different things, Johnny versus Rachel and Molly. So can we reference SVAP and say whatever newer edition is mentioned in SVAP could substitute in lieu of this release?
We cannot, not
no. in the rule. No, yeah, not okay. in the rule.
So it's not as flexible as we had
SVAP can be used by vendors, but we cannot reference it in the rule as the referenced standard. If we are maintaining, we would need to reference an explicit standard.
We need an actual standard, right? Exactly. And
is there a trial? We can reference trial use standards, though. Is there a trial use for the one that that's being proposed to be updated within the month? Back to Amy and Andrea.
Well, we don't typically have any trial use.
So there's nobody piloting the one that you're...
And Brian, just to clarify too, ONC cannot, finalize something that we didn't propose in the first place. So if we didn't propose the current standard, then we can't, put it in our final regulation. It still needs to go through the whole reg process again.
Right, but if we know what it's going to be named when it's released, we could put it as an or in this that will support this one, release 3 or the release 3.1 for trial use.
So one of the things, this is Jeff Smith from Certification and Testing. You know, one of the things that we did in HTI1 for electronic case reporting was we established an at least paradigm where we required developers to certify using at least the CDA or the FHIR version of the specification. Okay. There's a possibility that could be, but we also did kind of propose it that way. And we sought feedback on both standards and the pros and cons between requiring developers to use one or the other. So we are constricted by the Administrative Procedures Act, but remember that ONC certification is the floor. SVAP allows developers to certify using newer versions of adopted standards, but that doesn't negate the floor that's been established in regulation text. And so a developer could certify using the adopted version in reg text and choose not to certify using the SVAP version. And those are the requirements for certification. Now, there may be other requirements that are levied from different agencies that incentivize use of certification to use SVAP using newer standards. But as far as the certification program is concerned, what we put in reg text is the bare minimum, and we can't, for certification purposes, compel developers to use more than what's the reg text bare minimum.
All right. So thank you, Jeff. That's super helpful. So back to the program area at CDC, this is kind of an impact on you all. Hearing that, there is a strong likelihood that many developers will continue to send this reference R2 release 3 criteria for many years to come. And you'll need, even though you're about to release a new guidance, are you guys willing to continue to support that? Because you'll have to.
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to defer to show on this because I'm not as up on the history of how this has all worked. But my understanding is that we've had this problem for quite some time, and that, you know, the bottom line is that our requirements are more stringent than these requirements. And so facilities, if they want to be able to submit to us, need to adhere to the more stringent requirements because we can't have every data element that's necessary be, you know, bogged down by some of these processes in order to evolve in the way that's needed. So I'm not actually understanding probably well enough the ramifications and how these ramifications may be different than past ramification, you know, a situation that we've been in for a long time. And Sho may be able to, I'm sorry that I'm just coming back from being out for a couple of days, so I may not have looped up with Sho in advance adequately, but I probably need you guys to help me really understand the ramifications of that, because I don't know that this is different than it has been for quite some time, if I understand correctly. And I apologize if I'm not entirely tracking what will manifest here.
Yeah, and I think one thing, just given what we can say during an NPRM period, Andrea, it may be good just to talk to you separately from this forum, just to talk through that. Okay. And we are happy to include, you know, others as well. But just given, you know, what we can comment on, we could do feds to feds conversations, but some of that gets into stuff that we cannot say in this forum.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Thanks. I'll just make a broad comment that this, I think this is a great indicator of why it is so important that updates and proposed changes to HL7 criteria happen in the, you know, public and ISO process of the HL7 organization, so we can see these changes coming as standards for trial use in advance of their implementation by program areas. That way, federal regulations can be pointing to things that are coming down the pike. I'm encouraging you all to work, you know, within the standards bodies to make sure that, you know, we don't end up again with a timing situation like this where we're about to be locked into a standard that you guys are about to move past. All right. I'm open to suggestions. Do we, how do we want to phrase this? And is there a ability, Johnny, is the text that you put in there referencing?
You had requested the language that we used in HTI1 for F5. And so I just provided the link to the
ECFR for that. Does anyone want to propose a suggestion on how to put that at least language referenced in HTI1 into this in particular, so that we can get around locking into a particular standard, hopefully allow the program area to evolve. In a timely way.
Bryant, we could also come back to this towards the end, right. Which we may have some resolution to propose.
Great.
For some additional information.
Great. Okay. Let's, and again, the scale that we're dealing with, Andrea, we're talking about, you know, thousands of providers who are under the current release, and how many of them are you expecting would actually implement the soon to be released during that time frame? Are you gonna hope that it's 100%?
Amy, from what I'm understanding, that is the expectation, and I can group up with the team. I think it's, you know, there's a necessary additional data element that needs that, you know, as antimicrobial testing evolves and changes, there are things that have to get updated. And so there's an additional data element that needs to be put in there and is probably already delayed in getting into there, right? So it's important. Okay.
All right. this may have impacts on what the cost assessment is, but we'll come back to it. All right, let's jump back to the screen, the slide screen, and move on to the next criteria. And I saw Carl bounce onto the screen. So
I am here.
Carl, would you mind reading the proposed language revision that would impact your program area?
Not a problem. Syndromic surveillance, transmission to public health agencies, revise transmission to public health agencies, syndromic surveillance, certification criteria, F2. Revised transmission requirements via updated standards, HL7 version 251 implementation guide, syndromic surveillance, release 1, U.S. realm standard for trial use. Expire existing standards on January 1st, 2027. Change name to syndromic surveillance, transmission to public health agencies.
Great. So as we discovered in the last section, the proposed name change is just a reversal of what's on either side of the dash. To stay consistent with all the other rules.
Correct.
Any comments from folks? Let's dive into the back to the spreadsheet and swap screen so it's a little bit bigger. Thank you. All right, so it looks like we have some comments already from Hans. Hans, are you on today, or is today one of the days he couldn't be?
I think today Hans was on vacation.
Yeah. Would Molly, would you volunteer to read Hans's comment for the record?
Yes, absolutely. So Hans,
you have to do it in an Austrian.
That I cannot do. But Hans stated that syndromic surveillance has unique challenges in that it uses HL7V2 ADT messages, yet the clinical payload is increasing while identifiable data is being shared based on state-specific requirements. The question therefore becomes whether it is worth upgrading in this time window or starting to consider a switch to FHIR-based approach that could be analogous to EICR on FHIR, yet have its own trigger events content, can contain identified or de-identified data, is not consumed by, or sorry, it is not subsumed by ACR, but rather modeled after ACR, yielding substantial consistency and opportunity for alignment where appropriate.
All right. Well, he's pointing out some heavy issues there. And one that does impact the state of Washington, because our implementation guide here in Washington for syndromic surveillance, just as an example, does require some identifiers so that we can link back to notifiable conditions, for example. And then we strip those identifiers before transmitting on to the NSSP program. Whoa, what is going on? All right. Steve, Ike.
Related issue, thinking about adoption date and how does that tie in with promoting interoperability and starts of reporting periods. If we're expiring something on January 1st, that would be the first day of a reporting period. That could create all kinds of havoc.
So are you proposing expiring December 31st?
I would think so. If you want to have a replacement standard be in place then on January 1st, that would create better alignment with reporting periods, both for providers and data receivers.
And CDC week.
Yes. Otherwise, we've got an issue with having to receive standards inconsistently for that calendar year. I will admit I've not looked to see if one's a Sunday, Monday, day of the week piece, but it seems odd to be changing.
Yeah, Carl and team Do you have any comment on the CDC week or the roll-ups that are used in NSSP? Do they occur on the first of the month, the calendar week, or the CDC?
Yeah, I don't think that's relevant. I think Steve's right that it the date should be consistent with how it's measured under like promoting interoperability or whatever, more so than the data itself. Yeah.
All right.
January 1st, 2027 is a Monday.
All right. So Lee, can I ask you to put your old CMS hat on for a second? Or if there's folks on, I don't think we have our CMS official in this subcommittee. Did Lee drop? All right.
And the same issue would hold true for anything with adoption dates. It's not solely syndromic.
Yeah, no, we should probably go back to the previous sessions.
This is probably more of a general comment that could be added in the general section. Yeah.
That were repeated throughout, but again, the issue is, I've got no particular preference for data.
Is it just a wording of expiring on January 1st or going into effect January 1st? So that it's, which would imply December 31st, the others expire. I'll let the ONC staff mill over that, and maybe we'll come back to some general comments.
Yeah, I think just in general, the comment would be absolute clarity on date of last use for transmission. And then whatever that last date is, should align with other calendars, such as promoting
with a 3-year lead time. Hopefully they won't wait till the last minute. Let's go back to the, rather than the general, anybody else have comments?
Right. That's the other aspect. It's not, we as public health receivers want to make sure that we're using the right standard. So we do want to look at kind of common adoption dates, unless things are backward compatible, because if people get too far advanced, we have not yet modified our systems to receive the more advanced standard, we've got the problem on the other end. You also need to consider minimum necessary. If somebody's gotten it further advanced than what you can catch, is that a violation of minimum necessary?
Yeah.
And I'll just say here, minimum necessary, it would be outside the scope of this particular discussion, but agree with what Rachel said there about the, if there is a comment regarding December 31st versus January 1st, that I think that could be an overarching comment versus within each of the specific criteria.
Well, the minimum necessary is relevant, that if more information is being disclosed than is then can be received, that could very easily be perceived as being in violation of minimum necessary disclosure.
Understood, but that would be outside the scope of this particular discussion for this NPRM.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In terms of the date, Actually, no, it's not, because if public health has modified the receiving end of it to take a more sophisticated standard that's got more data, then there's no violation of minimum necessary, because public health has got the capacity to receive all the data. The issue of the minimum necessary is if public health has not yet positioned itself to receive all the data, should you disclose something that public health doesn't have the capacity to receive.
Yeah. And so let me dig into that for a second. Carl, if you have any of your other team on that wants to comment. does the current IG that's referencing, can you scroll over to the reference of the IG on the table, please? Does the current IG allow for the optional reporting of the data elements that Carl's referencing, like identifiers, in the IG that's referenced here?
So the way that the IG is specified right now, the data are to be anonymized in the sense that the identifying elements of name, address, city, and state, and so forth are supposed to be suppressed. That's the way that the IG is crafted.
Wasn't there in the previous IG?
There might be something in there. I'd have to go back and check to see if there's a language that says, you know, that gives you an option to do it differently.
The previous, I'd like to know what's happened. I have not been in the community of practice to know what evolution's taken place, but previous implementation guide did have optional elements that individual states could exercise. So they were optional, but requirable by a given jurisdiction if that jurisdiction passed a rule or a law or local law that applied and made those elements not optional in that jurisdiction. But they were optional in the overall national guide so that they'd be visible to implementers and EHR vendors.
Understood. I'll have to go and research that. I would assume that that language was carried over from the current version to the new proposed version. But again, that would have to go back and confirm that, but can do that. It's an important point that you can do that. I don't know offhand.
Great. Well, if you could do some homework or have the team dig in on that, it could... Jillian, thinking to CSTE's community of practice, maybe that's a question that CSTE could dig in on and make sure that they provide us with language, or if this is a potential issue that may be impacting jurisdictions. And there are a number of jurisdictions, especially during COVID times, that enacted rules permitting the identifiers to flow to through the syndromic programs and then linkages between syndromic and notifiable conditions.
And I think that's only going to increase. That is only going to increase. So Carl, if you could get me the question specifically that we would pose, I can carry that forward to the community of practice.
This is Molly. I think the community of practice is a really great place to have that discussion. I will say from an NPRM perspective, just to keep us very narrowly focused, is that the way that the NPRM is written is that we only reference the ability for the implementation guide to do required data elements. So if there are optional elements that are required at the state level, that is not something that the NPRM explicitly would cover.
That's not true, Molly. Because it does mention local rules still apply. So
well, certainly, but from a certification perspective, when going through the conformance testing, the NPRM is only required to cover the required elements.
We've gone back and forth with this. HL7 is considered creating a separate criteria where it's optional, but it's not optional. So it's a required for testing and implementation that it has to be able to be supported, but it may or may not be exercised. It's kind of a nuance of who's requiring it. And we've oftentimes lamented that the NIST was only going through and doing the required only and not the ones that are oftentimes exercised by more than half of jurisdictions. It really should be in there as a required for certification.
Can we just get a clarification on how we are defining required?
So for the purposes of the NPRM, it would be within the implementation guide where the data elements are listed as required, recommended, or optional.
Okay, thanks.
I think it's not, it's required, but empty is permitted and optional.
Because we do get into trouble with this quite often in terms of the required versus required when available or required but empty, because public health does not want the message to fail. And so there are very few actually required fields that would make that fail. So yeah, it's a very tricky situation for public health.
And I just wanted to jump in and do a time check. We have 3 minutes until public comment starts.
Oh my goodness. I thought we had changed the timeline to be to the end of the hour.
That's starting.
No, that's starting next. Yeah, next week, Brian, because everyone wanted to have time for their calendar changes. So yeah,
all right.
No worries.
Shoot, I was going off of the wrong clock. All right, let's. So Carl's got his homework. Jillian, if you can defer this discussion to the community of practice, and I have a feeling that we will need to make some general comments about required and what public health deems as required, since this, you know, public health jurisdictions or public health agencies are in many, especially home rule states, the locals or the state level that have the power to make required elements. We need to make sure that our vendors are supporting the ability to comply without undue expense. So we're going to need to make sure that that language gets in there appropriately so that developers aren't inadvertently making it harder than it needs to be.
Agreed. One thing, Brian, if you could have somebody from Washington point me to what you were referencing in the previous guide, that I can very quickly ensure that that language is in the newer guide, or answer that question at least, so we know.
And it's not just Washington; there are other jurisdictions.
Yeah, no, Illinois is doing it. There's Mississippi. There's a group of folks that have that situation for sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
I didn't want to make myself feel like I was putting my thumb on the scale, Katie. Is this on this or on?
Yeah, on? Just one really quick note on the previous discussion. And I promise to make it quick. Just wanted to quickly clarify just the difference between what would typically be required within an IG versus what's required through our program. We point to what is within an IG and base our requirements around that, unless it's a functional criteria. If there are data elements that need to be required for being transmitted, that are not today, that would be something that I would encourage goes through the HL7 process. It's not something that we really control through certification.
Yeah. And this is where the ISDS had a document with rules of the road documented in terms of how these, how the guide should be interpreted. And when ISDS was defunded, I think we lost a lot of that explanatory guidance on how to interpret the HL7 guide appropriately. So we'll try to figure out a place to resurface that, maybe explicitly in HL7 going forward. Okay, we're at the public comment time. Is that correct, Peter?
That is correct.
Go back to the slide deck. We did a terrible job of getting through all of our criteria.
Well, we
should be the easy ones.
We will have extended time starting with the next Group 1 meeting next week. But at this time, we would like to open the meeting for public comment. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. We'll pause for a moment to see if there are any members of the public with raised hands. And while we wait, again, a reminder that the next Group 1 meeting will be on August 6th. It will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, extended for half an hour. And a reminder that all the high-tech materials can be found on healthit.gov. I am not seeing any raised hands at the moment. And Asel has informed me that there are no members online by phone with any questions or comments. So at this time, I will turn it back over to Bryant for closing remarks. And Bryant, you're on mute.
Rather than losing 8 minutes, can we go back to the slide deck? What's next in our list? Can we queue that up? Because I believe some of the other program CDC and program areas were so immunization. Great. So if we could get just some opening comments, and then we'll obviously need to extend the discussion to this into the next session. So apologies to folks from the immunization program who are on today. You may have to come back next week, but any comments from folks on this one? I'm hoping that immunization is such a tried and true early adopter, Mary Beth, that we're 100% in support of this. Any comments?
Yeah, thanks, Bryant. And yes, we are for the most part in support of all of this, particularly moving towards the 2018 update version of the IG. So we do plan to comment in support. We did think there's room for conversation, though, about some of the pieces that are in that updated 2018 IG. And I know you mentioned Hans is not on today, but I'm sure he has thoughts about part of what's in Appendix C, which really pulls forward standards around ERR5, which is more specific error messaging. We think that it's a good thing because it will make the error messages and acknowledgement messages more specific, but it will be a lift for EHRs to incorporate that. So we were hoping to have just a conversation about that piece, and maybe we can carry that over to next week.
And Hans is present. Perfect. Yeah, it's going to make our session.
Brian, this is, just to add on to that piece, one of the other aspects of those error conditions are tie-ins to the insight conditions for ONC about what HIT vendors are going to be required to record.
A numerator denominator issue.
So it's a important discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if I remember those insight, it's transmission errors have to be at a minimal level below a couple of percentage points. So
right.
being able to document and receive those error messages back will be critical to.
And one of the issues, especially for states that have opt-in versus opt-out, is that if you return a message that says this person has not opted in, that is typically reported as what some folks might interpret as an error message, but it's not really an error message in terms of sending a complete message. It's just a accurate message, but a response that the IIS cannot incorporate the data. But again, if that's not clarified in the error reporting and included appropriately the insight condition, it can potentially report erroneous information. So that's another fallout of the discussion.
All right. Other comments from folks?
I think the other piece that may be helpful for us to discuss is the requirement under F1 for EHRs to receive incoming patient level immunization specific queries, because that it would be helpful, and I don't know if ONC can comment on it, but it would be helpful to hear ONC's intent with that one, because I think, you know, IIS are developing the ability to query, but it under IZ Gateway and some of the work they're doing with IZ Gateway, but it does kind of flip the script a little bit on the expectations of which direction those queries go. So I think that may need more discussion as well.
Yeah, that's one that both for this bi-directional capability and for the prescription drug monitoring program capability, there seems to be some language potential flipping around that our ONC colleagues may be restrained from commenting, but perhaps our CDC colleagues could explain the intent there. Their folks on from the
CDC colleagues are covered by the same rules in terms of interpretation. But I believe because we include it in preamble that we can comment that the intention here is to ensure that the ability to do that query is on both ends of the spectrum. I know we didn't cover F21 here today, but we will in a future conversation, but just to ensure that that function is mirrored between both of the systems in the event that there is information in one system that might not be in the other. So I think we do discuss that in preamble, so that gives us a little bit more wiggle room here in terms of the conversation.
Okay. Are there folks from the CDC immunization program on?
Yeah, this is Kafai Dadani, and I also have my colleague Jenny Junkins on.
Great. Any thoughts on those error messages and messages going back about patients opting out? So not truly being an error, but.
So at this particular point, I think we don't have anything to add at this particular point beyond the comments that and that Mary Beth mentioned, and do believe there's an opportunity for further discussion around the error messaging. So there's no additional thoughts to add on that.
All right.
And to that end, Brian, I think that the insights conditions will be under subcommittee 2. And so I'm wondering if we want to maybe plan a group 1 and group 2 meetup to think about how F1, F21, and the insights conditions all play together.
And not wait until the final 3 days to have that crossover. That's a great suggestion.
Okay, if possible.
Well,
schedule is going to be tricky in terms of permitting that, but maybe we may have to do. So I encourage you all as task force members, you are allowed to attend those other meetings. So be sure, Mary Beth, and look at their agenda and schedule and join in for those discussions. And they can promote you to being a panelist since you're an official task force member.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ike, I cut you off.
There are several of us that are participating in multiples.
Excellent. We're at time, but I want to be respectful. Peter, anything we need to do to wrap things up here?
We are all good. We can go ahead and adjourn the meeting.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. That was a whirlwind. We almost got through what we had hoped to, but not quite. So we'll have some housekeeping, catch up, and homework to report back on for our next session.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care.
Thanks, Brent.